Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 109, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a wonderful week as we edge closer and closer towards the beginning of the NFL season. Got some preseason games going on today. Got some preseason games going on right as we speak on this wonderful Saturday. Sensational Saturday, if you will, depending on where you are in terms of the weather. We're going to get right into it, and I think where we're going to start this week with an abbreviated Standout 7 before we do our NFC preview. That's the big thing. You saw it in the title. If you were here last week, you know I mentioned it. If you're coming back, thank you. If you're first times here, welcome aboard. Weekly throughout the NFL season. But first, before we get into our NFC section, our NFC predictions, we're going to talk QB battles, because some of them have been settled in the last week. We touched on one of these, but the other three are in the NFC. Really four, but we'll get into that last one. Let's talk about Denver, because we're in a situation right now where I guess if you're Vic Fangio, in going with Teddy Bridgewater, I think, and I believe this would be purposeful, the message that is being sent is, we need to win this year, or I am going to lose my job. This team was 7-9 in 2019, I might remind you. 7-9 with a rookie QB for part of the season. Drew Lock 4-1 as a starter that part of that season. 64% completion percentage, 7 touchdowns to 3 picks. They got very little production out of the passing game as a whole. You take a look at the guys that started all 16 games, 8 for Flacco, 5 for Locke, and 3 for Brandon Allen. They combined for 16 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. They combined for just over 3,000 yards. That is awful. Philip Lindsay was a 1,000-yard rusher. He is no longer with the team. The leading receiver was Cortland Sutton, who is a pretty darn good player and is still with the team. However, last season, Cortland Sutton played just one game due to injury. So, you're in a bit of a predicament if you're Vic Fangio. Not to mention the fact Vic Fangio is 63 years old. He's not exactly the young pup that got this job who's, you know, sort of on the cutting edge of the NFL. He's sort of old guard in that the guy's been around a while. He's bounced around. He's been a DC since somewhere in, you know, the mid-90s. With the Carolina Panthers, then to Indianapolis, then with Houston, then San Francisco, then Chicago, and here he is. He had success in San Francisco, some success mixed in Chicago, I would say. Certainly more successful during some of those years in San Francisco when he was with Jim Harbaugh, 13-3 year, his first year there as the DC, 11-4-1 the following year, and then we have 12-4, and 2014, 8-8. Before parting ways. Is Vic wrong in sending this message? No, because at the end of the day, coaches want to keep their jobs, right? As much as I can sit on this show on my soapbox and say, hey, give Drew Lock a year to actually try and, you know, be your starting quarterback. The guy was drafted to be the starting quarterback. 5 games his first year, he looked pretty good. 13 games last year, not so much. 16 touchdowns to 15 picks. There were some injuries in there, obviously. The week where they had to go quarterbackless was a little bizarre. When they had, I believe his name was, it escapes me. Let me just look to be sure. Kendall Hinton at QB, who went 1-9. Obviously, a receiver who was forced into duty at the quarterback position. You can't really hold him accountable there. You know what I mean? I don't think that would be fair. Either way, Teddy Bridgewater coming off of a 4-11 season as the starting QB for the Carolina Panthers, 69% completion percentage, 3,700 yards, 15 touchdowns to 11 picks. Now, is this impressive? No. Is this impressive for Teddy Bridgewater? Also no. So we're left in a situation wondering why we're here. Well, the reason why we're here is Teddy Bridgewater, entering his age 29 season, at one point was a Pro Bowl-level quarterback who threw for 3,000 yards and led a team to the postseason. Now, 3,000 passing yards and 14 touchdowns is nothing crazy, but this is a team back when he was just 23 years of age in Minnesota that was led by Mike Zimmer, who's, you know, still there, but moreover led by Adrian Peterson, rushing for nearly 1,500 yards on the ground. You know, their leading receiver in terms of catches was Stephon Diggs at age 22, and some of the guys that we might consider a staple there, like Adam Thielen, just 12 catches that season. So the offense was much more predicated on running the ball, like you could argue their offense still is, but they had less of that explosive threat. It was Diggs and Rudolph, who was, you know, wasn't really there. To the point where you could rely on him as a staple of your offense. And I think you can make that argument that he's still kind of a decent contributor at this point in his career. So, does Teddy Bridgewater have the skill set to be a leading man in an offense that actually throws the ball to move it down the field and can compete in a division that has the defending AFC champions in Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs? Because in order to beat those guys, you're going to have to throw the ball. Well, looking at the offense they have, I like Cortland Sutton. I like, in spurts, what I saw from Jerry Jeudy. I like Tim Patrick a lot. Noah Fant and Albert O, because we're not going there with that last name. No disrespect intended, by the way. Two athletic young tight ends, Melvin Gordon in the backfield. This is a team that could be decent offensively. And you look at the defensive side of the ball, Bradley Chubb's still there, Von Miller's still there. In the secondary, you have Kyle Fuller and Ronald Darby, Kareem Jackson pushing back to safety, and Justin Simmons. This is a team that could be decent. So I can understand why Fangio would make this move. If it's me, I'm leaving Drew Lock in there because I got to know what I have. If Teddy goes out and we have a 9-8 season, what was the point? You know what I mean? Sure, I might have saved my job, and at the end of the day, that's what you have to do. You have to save your job. Because you can go out and help the organization by playing Drew Lock, but if that means that you're going to lose your job in the process, to be honest, you're not going to really care. You're going to be sitting on your couch next year, and they're going to be drafting a quarterback. Now, the thing is, Teddy Bridgewater on a one-year deal, do I see him having a best in his career year? Which is probably what it would take to get this team over the edge. I don't think 15 touchdowns, which was a career high last year, by the way, is going to do it. He's going to have to throw for somewhere at least in the mid-20s. We know he's pretty good at limiting the turnovers. He's never thrown more than 12 in a season, and that was his rookie season. Last year he threw 11 for a Carolina team without Christian McCaffrey, a team that wasn't very good, if we're being completely honest. The year before, we saw him in New Orleans start five games, go 5-0, 1,380 passing yards on the season, 9 touchdowns, 2 picks, which led me to believe that this is a guy, and obviously it's bad luck that Christian McCaffrey wound up getting hurt last year, this is a guy who has the skill set to not only manage a game, but he can make the throws necessary in terms of the short and medium passing game. I don't think he's a great downfield passer, personally, especially with everything having gone through with his leg. I don't know if he still has that under him. Might have to lob it up a little bit. But this is a guy that, you know, can be a mid-20s touchdown passer. And I think right now he probably is a better quarterback than Drew Lock. But like I said, organizationally, it makes more sense to find out what you have in an investment. Because at the end of the day, that's what a high draft pick quarterback is. He's an investment. And know when you need to cut your losses. Now, if Teddy goes out and they go 12-5, well, here we are. Now you are a playoff team. You're a Teddy Bridgewater team. You're going to re-up them and you're going to go do your thing. And Vic can probably stay on. If it's me, like I said, GM, I'm starting Drew Lock. If I'm the coach, I'm starting Teddy because I need to win. Second team that's going through some QB debating is San Francisco. And San Francisco, it would be the obvious Trey Lance versus the known and established Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, I say known and established with air quotes because he's not really established. Like, the guy's played in more than 10 games once in his career. This is his age 30 season. He went 13-3 2 years ago. That is true. They did that. He threw 27 touchdowns, 13 picks, 4,000 yards, just a hair under. you take a look, and that team, they were buoyed by that defense. George Kittle, one of the best tight ends in football. Deebo Samuel's a pretty good wideout. Those are their two leading receivers. Third receiver, in terms of yardage, Emmanuel Sanders. In the backfield, Raheem Mostert bursted out during the playoff run, ran for almost 800 yards that season. Matt Breida, who fell off the team, fell off the earth, it seems, who I think was, you know, pretty productive of a back. Tevin Coleman, who's no longer with them. What do you do? You're in a division, and we're going to do the NFC predictions this episode, obviously, so we'll go a little bit more in-depth later on. You're in a division where last year you came in last at 6-10. The Seattle Seahawks are a playoff contending team. The Rams got better by swapping their QB with the Detroit Lions. And oh, by the way, the Cardinals brought in J.J. Watt to help out their defense, and they have Kyler Murray presumably going to be more healthy than he was at the tail end of last year when they almost made the playoffs. So you are drawing the short stick. A little bit of a spoiler for late in the episode. You're drawing the short stick here. If I had to guess, I would say that Trey Lance will not only make his way onto the field in a couple of games where Jimmy Garoppolo starts, I think he may wind up starting come maybe halfway through the year. This team is not awful, and you know, we'll jump them to the head of the line here. On the outside at receiver, you're running out Deebo Samuel, who, as I just said, is a decent contributor. Mohamed Sanu, who's getting older. Brandon Ayuk, who, not sold. George Kittle at tight end, all-world caliber. Trent Williams helping bolster that O-line. The O-line still got some household names. Trent Williams and Alex Mack. Guys like McGlinchey, who are pretty good, I believe. On the defensive end is where you're going to make your money, though. Nick Bosa, Arik Armstead, Kinlaw on the inside, Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner. The secondary, I'm not really sold, especially losing Richard Sherman, who I know was getting older, but was kind of a veteran presence. I just don't think this team's going to be that good. I'm not going to lie to you. So with that being said, why not try to accelerate your retooling or rebuilding by getting Trey Lance the reps that he needs? And look, I know there were some people during the draft that said he's going to be a development guy, it's going to take a little while. Well, it can take a little while, that's fine. But in the meantime, we kind of, one, got to put some people in the seats. And two, if we're going to lose, we might as well let the kid get some reps. He can only get better. I'm not saying throw him out there and let him take a beating, but I'm saying it can't hurt to let him get some chemistry with some of the guys that you think are going to be the heart of this team for a couple of years. George Kittle, you'd hope if you're a Niner fan or in the Niner front office, not going anywhere. Deebo Samuel, a good player to hold on to. Raheem Mostert, what has he got left in the tank? I'm not saying he's 400 years old, but the fact of the matter is that playoff run was the most productive part of his career, period. He's entering his age 32 season. He's never run for 1,000 yards. He's never carried the ball more than 150 times in a season. You're asking him to be the lead back. Can he do it? We'll find out. I'd go Lance over Jimmy G probably by halfway through the season when you can pretty, you know, safely say you are out of it, even on a last-place schedule. Now we get to the intriguing one, the Chicago Bears. Duh Bears. The Chicago Bears are an interesting situation because if Aaron Rodgers had sat out this season, their division would be much more wide open. However, he will not be doing that. Shocking, I know. Nostradonotic had that one pegged, put one on the scoreboard for me. The other side's got plenty more, but you know what? You got to give me my one when I get it. Andy Dalton will be starting in week one for the Chicago Bears, and call me crazy, I think Andy Dalton's a decent quarterback. Will Andy Dalton lead this team to the playoffs? No. If you want to bet on that, I've got some beans I can sell you, some magic beans that'll grow you a beanstalk in your backyard that can take you to the heavens. And the Giants will make it rain, not the football Giants, the Giants will make it rain gold upon your house. We're talking about a team with David Montgomery as the lead back, Allen Robinson on the outside. Everybody loves Allen Robinson. Marquise Goodwin in this receiving core, Darnell Mooney, some decent players, Cole Kmet starting at tight end. All right, I mean, nothing that's going to blow you away. On the defensive end, you know some of the brand names. You know Danny Trevathan. You know Roquan Smith. You know Robert Quinn. You know, oh, by the way, Khalil Mack. In the secondary, you know Eddie Jackson and Tashaun Gibson. At corner, a little bit shakier. Desmond Trufant, can he bounce back? Kendall Vildor, how will he develop? Artie Burns, former Steeler. It's a team that's probably almost certainly going to be on the outside looking in. With that being said, are you obligated to do the thing that I just talked about, where you start the veteran for a handful of games and then play the rookie? No, you're not obligated. In fact, there are plenty of rookies who start on teams that aren't that great or teams that are very clearly not going to make the playoffs. You take a look at last year's Chargers team. It didn't make any sense to me that they wanted to go with Tyrod at the beginning of the year. You knew your team had some talented players, but they were not going to make the playoffs, in all likelihood. And Justin Herbert had a rookie of the year season, and they still couldn't get over the hump. They wind up going 7-9, and that's a great year with a rookie QB starting. So could you not tell me that the Bears could have a similar situation? I'm not saying Justin Fields is going to go out and outperform or even perform up to the level of Justin Herbert. However, Justin Fields could go out there and do enough things to impress us that, and us being people like me that are watching the games, people that are commentators, people that are scouts, people that are in the organization, or, oh, by the way, the people that pay real money to sit in Soldier Field and watch this team that keeps missing the playoffs, tell them, okay, this guy's got it. He's early on, but he's got it. We're going to invest in the players around him. We're going to get better wideouts. We're going to add something to the backfield, a big-name tight end, maybe. Add this, that, and the third to that maybe next season when Rodgers is gone, maybe the year after, if it takes a little while. This team could be a playoff team. I get starting Dalton because, yeah, you start the veteran for a couple games, it goes mediocre, and then you go to the rookie. Okay, that's how it always goes. But it doesn't have to go that way. I mean, this is a Bears team that, you know, in all likelihood is either coming in third or in last. Andy Dalton is not a bad quarterback, but Andy Dalton in Dallas, with the skill position players around him last year, in 9 starts and played in 11 total, 2,170 passing yards, 14 touchdowns to 8 picks. That's not going to knock your socks off. That's the lowest yards per game he's ever had in his career. Mind you, the year before, he played on a team that went, he was 2-11 when he started, and he threw for 270 yards a game. I mean, he's not going to turn the ball over an insane amount. Most interceptions he's had in the last handful of seasons is 14, which is a lot, but it's not the 20 that he had in his third year when they were 11-5. You know, the guy's a vet, he knows what he's doing, but he could just as easily know what he's doing from the bench, from the quarterback room, when he's helping Justin on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. I don't know. Maybe I'm all in on the rookies this year. What do you guys think? Let me know down in the comment section if where you're listening has a comment section, or on social media at Nick Donatic on all social media platforms. Let me know. Maybe I'm a little too gung-ho on the rookies this year. I just feel like it's kind of a waste. Like, why run them out there? Jimmy Garoppolo, you got a huge contract in there. Sure. Andy Dalton? Like, really? What are we doing? The next one we wanted to discuss, this is probably the shortest one we're going to get out of these. New Orleans, Jameis Winston going to be the starter, Taysom Hill going to be the backup. It makes perfect sense. Realistically, Taysom Hill is a gadget player. He really is, and as much as it's entertaining to watch him do what he does, I don't know if he can do it under center the whole time. Not saying Jameis Winston is a fantastic quarterback, but you forget this guy is entering, what, his age 27 season? He was a number one pick. He was one of those all-time kind of guys in college. And I'm not saying that it carries over, because, well, he's got 88 interceptions in 70 career starts, so it doesn't. But I think the 30-interception season, which was glorious, and if you listen back then, I was rooting for the 30-interception milestone. 5,000 yards, 33 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. That is a triple crown that will never be reached by another quarterback. No QB ever. I can say this with confidence. No QB ever, maybe even as we get to 18 games, it's more possible, but no QB ever is going to hit the 5,000-30-30 club. It is one where Jameis will stand alone, and that will stand the test of time. Will 5,000 yards get broken? Of course it will. It'll get broken this season, I would say. Will 6,000 yards eventually get broken? It's possible. Nothing is impossible. 60 touchdowns? Sure. 30 interceptions? Will it ever get broken again? It might. It's not impossible. But 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions with 5,000 yards, that's a combo plate you can't get at any restaurant. That is ridiculous amounts of talent and frustration at the same time. So, I think they made the right move. Will the Saints be a contender this year? We'll get through that when we get there in just a second. Another one, Philadelphia. And this is not a contest. This is obviously, I agree with what they're doing going with Jalen Hurts. I was not impressed with what I saw from Jalen last year, but that's just me. You have to run him out there. I get that. But it gets interesting when you consider that they just acquired the man, the myth, the shoe. Gardner Minshew acquired for depth, using my air quotes, going to be third on the depth chart behind Hurts and Flacco for a 2022 sixth round pick conditionally. And I'm intrigued. And it's not just because of the mustache, it's not because of the character that is Gardner Minshew. No, not in the slightest. It is the fact that, realistically, this guy's kind of impressed me on Jacksonville teams that are not good. Take a look at the 2019 Jaguars. They go 6-10, right? Under Doug Marrone, I believe in his final season there, correct? No, second to last season. Sorry, I forgot they kept him around for some reason last year. Former Lehman High School graduate, by the way. Same high school as me. Shout out to Doug Marrone, wherever you might be. Thankfully, if you're a Jaguar fan, not on the sideline anymore. Sorry, Dougie boy. I had to do it. Nick Foles, 0-4 as a starter for this team. 0-4. Talking 2019. They go to the shoe. This guy that no one's ever heard of. Look at this guy. You know, he got some Heisman votes. We talked about that before. Yeah, let's give him a shot. He wins six games, completes 61% of his passes, throws for 3,200 yards, 21 touchdowns to six picks. Well, the QBR is 44.6. I don't care what the QBR is. 21 touchdowns to six picks, and he wins six games. Leonard Fournette's on this team. Pretty good player. Let's look at the receiving core. DJ Chark, decent player. Chris Conley, okay, contributor. D.D. Westbrook, okay, contributor. Who's the tight end they're running out there? James O'Shaughnessy, 150 yards receiving. Seth DeValve, Nick O'Leary, Jeff Swaim. You get my point here. So last season, they go 1-15. Awful football team. Mike Glennon starts five games. He goes 0-5, seven touchdowns to five picks. Jake Luton starts three games. 54.5% completion percentage, two touchdowns to six picks. Just awful, right? Gardner Minshew starts eight games. He goes 1-7. You're like, wow, that's bad. 66% completion percentage, 2,260 yards, 16 touchdowns to five picks. In half the season, he surpasses both of the other guys combined. Oh, well, now look, his QBR went up. Yeah, his QBR went up. His passer rating went up. His completion percentage went up. His interceptions ticked up slightly in terms of percentage, but ever so slightly. Ever so slightly. This is a team where James Robinson, hey, pretty good running back, came out of nowhere for them. If he didn't come out of nowhere, who was their running back going to be? Yeah, my point exactly. DJ Chark takes a little bit of a step back, only plays in 12 games. Keelan Cole, second leading receiver for the team, only starts in 5 games. No 1,000-yard receiver on the team. Let's take a look at the tight end position. Did they improve upon that tight end chasm that they had? No, James O'Shaughnessy, 260 yards. Oh, nice, yeah. It's the quarterback's best friend right there, by the way. It doesn't matter. Not Gardner Minshew's best friend. Not the Jaguars' best friend. I think this guy can play NFL football. Do I think this guy is a Super Bowl champion? No. Not necessarily. It's possible. Do I think this guy's a Pro Bowl caliber passer? Not right now. But do I think that this guy is better than Andy Dalton right now? I think you could make the argument. Do I think that this guy could go out and run the offense for the 49ers every bit as capably as a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo could? You could make the argument. Do I think he's Jared Goff? No. Not yet. But I do think that he's a guy entering his age 25 season, and Goff's got a bit of a head start on him and a talent gap. Let's be honest here. Who impressed you more in their rookie outings, Jalen Hurts or Gardner Minshew? Don't you tell me it's Jalen Hurts because you're lying to yourself. I know that the right move for them to make is to start Jalen Hurts. I have a brain on my in my head. I'll say brain on my shoulders. I guess that would technically be right too. I have a head on my shoulders. I understand how these things work, I hope, at this point as we enter, what, fourth season, fifth season of this show? I hope so. Some of you might not think so, but I do. At the end of the day, though, the thing to remember is eventually you're going to have to win some games, and this is a division that often winds up a toss-up. And if you're going to be in a toss-up division, you might as well give it your best shot, and in doing so, you might wind up seeing Gardner Minshew on the field at this point. At some point, I should say. Not at this point. At some point this season, he might get some reps. Because you got him for a bag of beans, you might as well give it a go. There's no point in running Flacco out there. There's no point whatsoever. Number two in the standout seven. That was a long number one, I know, right? Number two in the standout seven. We're going to touch on just a quick one. Quick number two. A quick number three we really didn't want to have to talk about, and then we're going to get into the predictions. Number two, Lamar Jackson, I doubt it, when he heard, supposedly an NFL scout or report or insider said that they're eventually going to figure him out. I tend to agree with Lamar. I'm going to be completely honest with you, because there's nothing to figure out, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Quite literally, the guy is more athletic than the people that are trying to corral and tackle him. If anything, there's a better chance that his offensive coordinator and coaching staff figures out better ways to implement that athleticism than defenses magically coming up with a plan where they drink the juice from Space Jam and become more athletic. D linemen will suddenly be able to run as fast as him. He's not Peyton Manning back there, and that's fine, and he knows that. I would make the argument in terms of passing talent, he's not Robert Griffin back there. Robert Griffin, rookie year, peak Robert Griffin, as sad as that is to say, thanks to the injuries and just a whole heaping help of bad luck, peak Robert Griffin was a pretty darn good passer for my money. I don't think Lamar is there yet. I think Lamar is a decent passer, and he's a very explosive, mobile quarterback. And I don't think that's something you could necessarily bottle up, because I think we've seen it over the course of several decades. We saw with Michael Vick, it was hard to bottle him up. Michael Vick allowed himself to be bottled up when he did certain things strategically, or when he positioned himself in certain ways, or when, you know, he just didn't read the playbook or game plan when he was in Atlanta. When he came back with Philadelphia, his athleticism had taken a tick down, but his intelligence and his acumen for the game had improved. The arm strength was still there, and the accuracy started to get better. The fact of the matter is, the guy just got old. It happens. Injuries happen. Age happens. You can't handle it. Now, if you're going to tell me Lamar Jackson's going to have a knee injury a la Robert Griffin, then yeah, the NFL's going to catch up because he's going to slow down. If he can hold on to this elite-level athleticism for at least a handful of years, and I'm not saying deep into his 30s, I'm saying let's take a look at the fact that right now, the guy's started for 3 years and he's 24 years old this season, 36 touchdowns to 6 picks in his sophomore season, or really his first full season as a starter. Last year, the team goes 11-4 in his starts, 26 touchdowns to 9 picks. A team built around running the football, and well, he's the perfect quarterback for that. Set the single-season rushing record for QBs in 2019, 1,206 rushing yards. Last year, he topped 1,000 again. Can you try and bottle him up? Yes. If you have certain talents and certain physical specimens that are similar to him on your defense, freak linebackers that can run with him, safeties that can make sure they bring him down, yeah, you can do it. But is every team going to be able to do that? I doubt that severely. So I tend to agree. And look, if you've been listening, and if you haven't, I'll fill you in. I've been critical of Lamar passing-wise because I thought, first of all, New York Giants were picking at the tail end of that first round or right at the top of the second round, one or the other. I wanted the New York Football Giants to take Lamar Jackson because I liked what I saw out of him in college because I have eyes. And I thought all the hype about him not being a great passer was a little bit overblown. Now, is he the best passer in the league? We've had this discussion. No. But he's an adequate NFL passer. He's above average NFL passer when you put him in the right spots. And I think it's kind of ridiculous that he wound up slipping. Of course, he slips to an organization as good as the Ravens. They know what they're doing. They develop him a little bit. They build the offense around him, and things work out. Number three in the abbreviated standout seven. Might as well be number seven, if we're being honest. Number seven will be the little notes we'll do after. Unfortunately, we have to talk about this. Usually, we do not discuss things like this on the show. I try my absolute best to keep the show on the field as much as possible. As much as humanly possible. We talk about things on the field or relating to on the field. If I'm predicting things, if we're discussing team decisions, it all relates to building the team. It doesn't relate to things like this, but here we are. Isaiah McKenzie situation. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll let you know. Isaiah McKenzie reportedly fined, I believe, $14,650 for being spotted on a camera, I believe, in the team facility, not wearing a mask twice in one day. I don't know what the bar is, if it would have been once, if he would have been fined less. I don't know what the bar is, if he was potentially, maybe a teammate was uncomfortable and they told the NFL. I don't know if that's the case. I'm not going to float that out there. It appears that they were made aware by a camera, I guess. They have the exact time, so that's why I believe it would be a camera situation. But here we are. He is fined, and then we see a little back and forth with him and Cole Beasley on social media, and then the next day he posts that he has gotten his vaccine. I think $15,000 is not an insignificant fine, especially no matter how much you're making, it's a decent amount of money. He's not a billionaire. He's not a superstar who's got a, you know, $100 million contract guaranteed. He's not Dak Prescott contract. He's not the Patrick Mahomes money. So it's not nothing. I do think it's peculiar, the situation we find ourselves in. And I mean we being the NFL and we being people in general. That you are... I mean, if you would have adhered to the policy, you wouldn't have had this issue, I guess. I have to say that as well. Just a preface, if he would have had his mask on, it wouldn't have been a problem. They would have let him go. The reason this has made its way into the show is because the NFL reportedly wants a vaccine mandate, whether it be for all player personnel, I don't know. The union reportedly wants just keep testing, daily testing, keep people safe, do it your way, do it that way, rather. I don't know. I would say this. And this is purely my opinion. This is not the opinion of the organization or the network I am currently broadcasting for. So I will say that because whatever. I think it's an interesting battle if the NFLPA wants to have it. And I'm not suggesting they should or shouldn't. I'm just saying that in terms of leverage, it seems that the NFLPA would hold quite a few of the cards. And we've seen this in labor negotiations before where they've held the cards and then they've decided to fold or balk on one thing to get another. Maybe that's the situation we find ourselves in. I don't think, things being as they are presently, that the NFL would try to unilaterally enforce a COVID mandate. Going there, if we're going to go there, we'll go there. Based upon some of the statistics that are readily available, this is a league that is majority African-American players. And reportedly, the African-American community has a vaccination rate somewhere between 25 and 35%. Do they supersede those statistics? Are they in a different demographic? Of course, because they are very contact-oriented with their job. I don't know what the vaccination rate in the NFL would be. Some teams, I believe, are pushing towards 100%. I think we talked about the Falcons having 100% vaccination rate. We've seen this in other sports. We've seen this with some baseball teams mandating, if you will, which is, well, we'll leave it at that, that non-player personnel must be vaccinated, and things like that. I figured we'd bring it up. I don't know if you guys are interested, but it is something that is significant, and if we do see a little bit of a legal battle, we could have a bit of a pickle on our hands in terms of as NFL fans and for the NFL teams. Because at the end of the day, there's still kind of a division among the general public, and it's a rough spot to find yourself in if you're a guy like Isaiah McKenzie or if you're a guy like Cole Beasley, where you don't want to, but your job is strongly suggesting you do so, and if you're potentially facing fines or stricter regulations on your actions because you are unvaccinated, that's a choice that you're making, and you find yourself in a bit of a pickle, as Isaiah McKenzie did, and obviously went out and got vaccinated rather quickly. Either way, figured we'd have to mention it. Let me know what you guys think, or don't. Honestly, I don't mind not talking about stuff like this, but I figured, as it might be a bit of a labor dispute, potentially, we might want to bring it up. We've got some news and notes, but we can end the show with those, so let's get right into the NFC standings. And by standings, I mean my projected standings for the upcoming season. Now, last week, let me remind you, we had, in first place, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Tennessee Titans, the Buffalo Bills, and the Baltimore Ravens. And if memory serves, and if it doesn't serve, I will go back and correct this moving forward. As the wild card teams, we had the Indianapolis Colts, the Cleveland Browns, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. These are not in order, by the way. I had the Patriots just on the outside looking in, and the Chargers just on the outside looking in. As far as a one seed, we didn't name one last week. I think we had the Ravens and Chiefs potentially as our top two. Obviously, there's only one bye with seven playoff teams, so we'll get into that next week when we do our NFL postseason prediction, postseason pick'em, and our end-of-year award predictions and things like that. So just out of curiosity, I looked back at last year, and I'll have you know that we picked two of the AFC division winners correctly. We had the Chiefs winning the division, we had Buffalo winning the division, we had Baltimore winning the division. That did not happen. We did not have the Houston Texans completely collapsing. We had the Saints winning their division, which was correct. We had the 49ers. That didn't happen. We had the Packers. That did happen. And we had the Cowboys. That did not happen. So we're rocking a 50-50. However, last year, we did have Chiefs-Bucks Super Bowl with the Chiefs repeating. So we picked the bright matchup, we just picked it wrong. Interesting to note, the year prior, we had Chiefs-Saints. So we picked the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. The year they won, we didn't pick them. The year they lost, we did. Go figure. So, this season for the NFC, we're going to get started in the division of the defending champions, the NFC South. And in last place, I have the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know if it's really debatable. Maybe you could argue the Carolina Panthers, and I think it wouldn't be a bad argument. I just don't really like some of the things I've seen from this Falcons team. They are collapse-heavy, which is obvious. But that being said, if they didn't collapse in a handful of those games, they would not have come in last year. And the Carolina Panthers were only one game ahead of them. So as we take a look at the Carolina Panthers and the Falcons depth charts, I'll be perhaps changing my mind. We remember Carolina this year is running out there, Sam Darnold at QB. But Christian McCaffrey's going to be back. Robbie Anderson's taken a big step forward since he's been in Carolina. Will he take a step backward with Darnold at QB again? DJ Moore running out there as well. On the defensive side, some names that you know and some names that you might not. Brian Burns on the D-line with Morgan Fox. Shaq Thompson in that linebacking core with Hassan Reddick. In the secondary, J.C. Horn's going to be making his, you know, NFL debut out there at corner. Some thought they might have taken him a little high, but we'll see based on how he plays this season. And Jeremy Chinn in that secondary, who played pretty well, I believe, as a rookie last year. The more I look at it, you know what? With the Falcons playing a last place schedule, I'm going to change my pick. The Panthers' schedule will be slightly harder It's Sam Darnold. I don't like what I've seen from him a lot, and I don't think the Falcons will collapse as many games, collapse and completely throw away as many games as they did last year. I think I'm going to take the Falcons in third, and I'll take Carolina in dead last. I want to see what Sam Darnold has. I hope he impresses me. And I will say this, if the Atlanta Falcons find themselves in a situation where they are completely awful again, it's got to be rebuild time. I mean, obviously, Julio Jones isn't there this year, but it's worth noting, obviously, as you people likely remember if you play any fantasy football or if you were interested in Falcons football, Julio only played 9 games last year, you know, and we saw in Calvin Ridley that he's ready to be a number one wideout. His first 2 seasons, he had 821, 866 yards. His targets go way up last year. His catches go all the way up to 90. 1,374 yards. Calvin Ridley can be a number one receiver in the NFL. He's going to be focused out heavily with Julio not being there, but we saw, like I said, at some points in last season when Julio wasn't on the field, he was still pretty productive for my money. Give me a flip-flop there. Panthers in last, Falcons in second. I think it's going to be hard to argue this otherwise, but I'm going to have the Saints in second place. Without Drew Brees, I'm just going to have to see it to believe it. There was also, obviously, some tension in the situation with Michael Thomas and the team. There's still talent on this squad. Alvin Kamara is still there. Taysom Hill, obviously, probably going to feature in even more than usual. Traquan Smith and Deontay Harris still with the squad. But I don't think there's a surefire number two. I don't think they're going to get as much production out of the tight end position. Right now, listed Adam Trautman at number one tight end. I still like some of the players on their defensive side. Marcus Davenport, David Onyemata, Cameron Jordan, Quan Alexander coming in there, big piece to Mario Davis, formerly of the Jets. Losing, and this might sound silly, losing and aging Janoris Jenkins is going to be a hole to fill in that secondary. Marshawn Lattimore, obviously a good corner, but Malcolm Jenkins getting a little bit older. I don't know. I think even with Drew Brees back, I probably would have had them slipping to second place here. Probably an easy read for most of you out there as well. I've got the Bucs winning this division. We don't have to go over it. They're returning almost everyone. I believe literally every starter. They're just that good. Give me the Bucs to win this one. They might run for the one seed. I would say they're definitely a top three team in the NFC. Likely a top two team in the NFC, but we'll do that more next week. Next, we're going to go to the division that could have been interesting if Aaron Rodgers decided to, you know, play hardball, a la Carson Palmer. We talked about it a little bit before, but I've got the Chicago Bears in last place. We'll touch on it one more time. I just think they're not ready yet. And even with Dalton at the helm, it'll be interesting, I guess. But I think you just got to get Fields out there, pull the Band-Aid off, and see what he could do. So in third place, and I think the Lions and the Vikings are in similar positions, and no, I don't say that. I'm not obligated to say that about two teams in every division, though it seems it's usually third and fourth. This time I think it's second and third. The Detroit Lions running out there without Kenny Golladay this year, big loss on the outside, without Matthew Stafford, arguably a big loss as well. Jared Goff, a decent QB, let's see what he could do. Changing the coaching staff, obviously. Some decent players running around on that defense, but I don't know. I just don't think they're really going to be playoff contenders. Now, I wonder if the Minnesota Vikings will ever wind up being playoff contenders. It seems like they have a decent roster every year. Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson with D.D. Westbrook giving them some depth in that wide receiving core. They lose Kyle Rudolph, but they've got Irv Smith, who looked like a decent tight end at points last year. Dalvin Cook, can he stay healthy? Hopefully he can. Kirk Cousins, can he win the big games? If you're a Viking fan, hopefully he can. They bring in Dalvin Tomlinson on the defense. Poach another giant D lineman as Linval Joseph goes out the door. Dalvin Tomlinson, big addition. I like him. Sheldon Richardson also on that D line, along with Daniil Hunter. Patrick Peterson going to make his way out there in their secondary along with Bashaud Breeland. I think this Viking team will come in second. I think for quite a bit this season that they might be able to try and sneak into a wild card spot, but I think it might be a little bit crowded. Right now, as we mentioned last, I have the Bucs winning that division. I have the Packers winning this division. I have the New Orleans Saints taking one of the wild card spots, so that immediately takes it down to two. I remind you that last year the NFC West had two teams, almost three teams, in the playoffs. So it's a hard sell for me to say that the Vikings are going to be actually in the postseason, but I do think they will be contending for a spot as we push towards the tail end of the NFL season this year. Maybe Kirk will finally take a jump. You know, maybe after, let's see, how many seasons has Kirk been in Minnesota? Maybe on the fourth year in his age 33 season, he'll finally be able to try and make that run. One 10-win season in his career. 35 touchdowns to 13 picks last year. That's pretty good on paper. 7-9 team. Team just wasn't good enough. Maybe they'll be a little bit better. I think they will be. But, I mean, is 8-9 really that much of an improvement? You know? The Green Bay Packers are an intriguing team, and we're going to go through their depth chart. I know we didn't do it with the Bucks, but they're a special scenario with majority of their players being returning players, if not all of them. Aaron Rodgers, one of the best QBs in the NFL. Aaron Jones returning, one of the best running backs in the league. Devontae Adams returning, one of the best receivers in the league. Depth is where the things get interesting. Not that Devontae Adams can't do it all on his own. Some games he can. What does Randall Cobb have left in the tank, and why did Rodgers want him so bad? I don't know. Marquez Valdez-Scantling seems like a decent player, but he seems like a role player to me. Alan Lazard, the same thing. Devin Funchess obviously going to be out for a while. Equanimeous St. Brown, we've seen him bouncing around there for so long, and he just doesn't really seem to have improved a whole lot. The defense was big for them last year, for the Packers. Jair Alexander, Kevin King opposite him, Adrian Amos, and Darnell Savage in the secondary. I don't know. I think they might take a little bit of a step back. I don't know if I necessarily have them winning, you know, home field advantage all throughout. I think the Bucs are a little bit better than them as is. And I think if things get off to a rough start, you might have the chemistry issues crop up. Because Rodgers clearly doesn't want to be there. And if he doesn't want to be there, Devontae Adams, why would you want to be there? It's just going to be a little bit of a mess. The best thing you can hope for if you're a Packer fan is that they get off to a hot start and they stay hot and Rodgers stays in a good mood. And hey, who knows? Maybe he'll want to come back next year. Who knows? But either way, I have them winning this division. Next, let's go to the NFC least. Now, we talked about the Philadelphia Eagles a little bit. Let's pour over the Eagles depth chart, as it were, going into the NFL season. Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, the rookie on the outside. Zach Ertz and Goddard still both there at tight end. Miles Sanders, going to be the lead guy in the backfield. I don't know if he could be a lead back. I'm not going to lie to you. I think Miles Sanders might be a great back to have in your running back room. Last year ran for 867 yards. Over 800 yards both years. It's hard to say not, but something about it, I don't know. Maybe it's just this Eagles offense. The Eagles team was not very good last year, if we're being honest, due to injuries. On the defensive side, pretty similar sort of alignment. Anthony Harris coming in there at free safety. I just don't think this team's going to be that good because I don't think Jalen Hurts is very good. If I'm going to be honest with you, I think the offense, the direction they take it post-Peterson should be interesting. I think a lot of it's going to revolve around Hurts' mobility, because he didn't look great as a passer last year. And if that's the case, you run into some situations where you're really crossing your fingers and hoping he knows how to get down and get out of bounds. Or there's no fluky where he tries to make a cut and it gives out. Wouldn't wish that on anyone, especially a guy like Jalen Hurts. Young guy trying to prove himself in the league. I don't love their receiving core outside of Devontae Smith and the tight ends. And Miles Sanders pretty good back out of the backfield, along with Boston Scott catching the ball. But Rager, eh. Greg Ward, eh. Ortega Whiteside, eh. It doesn't do it for me. Travis Fulgham, some games he looks like he's a pretty decent wideout. Some games you don't really see him on the field. Was that strategy, perhaps? Was that, or poor strategy, I should say? Was he, I don't know, not utilized properly? You can make the argument. I have them in last. As much as this hurts me to say, I have the New York Football Giants in third place. I believe the last few years I've been, well, the last Manning year, I remember I was a little bit higher on them. I don't think I was high on them last year. This could be a year where I'm lower on them than everyone else. Daniel Jones just hasn't impressed me like he has some other people. Sterling Shepard is a number two receiver at best, and he's a number two receiver for this team. Darius Slayton, I think, has the upside to be better than Shepard, if I'm being honest. Kenny Golladay is a big one. He's a big acquisition for this squad. You remember, I was singing the praises of Kenny Golladay last year, and I believe the season before, prior to, you know, injury this past season. I believe it was the year before. 2,000-yard receiving seasons in 18 and 19. Last year, he plays just 5 games, 400 yards, 338 yards, sorry. I think he's what this offense needs. I think Evan Engram is not a very good tight end, but he's in a contract year. So if he wants another deal with the Giants or another deal elsewhere, he's going to have to do more than just be athletic. He's going to have to actually catch passes every once in a while. This offensive line looked improved at parts of last year. Other parts, not so good. Will Saquon Barkley be back as Saquon Barkley? Will he be the same? I don't know. I hope so for everyone involved. Devontae Booker looked pretty decent in some of the action I've seen him get in the preseason. He runs hard. He knows he's going to get the ball a little bit in this offense, especially as Barkley at some parts might be on a bit of a pitch clock, considering what he's coming back from. On the defensive side of the ball, what can I say? Adoree Jackson coming in. Let's see if he has an impact in the secondary. I like Jabril Peppers. I like Logan Ryan. I like in spurts what I saw from Xavier McKinney, though he was obviously battling injuries. They kept Leonard Williams on that D-line. Him and Dex Lawrence, a good pairing to help stop the run on the inside. Can the linebacking core stop the run on the outside as well as tackle? Giants haven't had a good linebacker in a while. You don't need me to tell you that. Either way, as much as I can see this team improving, offensively, just by way of Barkley being back, Golladay being there, and another year of chemistry with Slayton, it's not enough for me to put them above my second place finisher, the Washington football team. Now, you might say, whoa. You're putting the WFT above the Giants? Yes, I am. And the reason is, I like Terry McLaurin a lot, and I like Curtis Samuel as a gadget player and a wideout. Couple that with a stable of running backs who seem to kind of contribute, and the fact that, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick slash Heinicke, and I'm sure we'll see both of them, we're going to get some weird stuff out of this football team. And I say football team because that is their name. On the defensive side, a year wiser, a year stronger for Chase Young. Landon Collins, or the artist formerly known as Landon Collins, as his skill level's kind of dropped off, in my opinion, in Washington. The defense, look, this team isn't that great. I'm going to be real with you. I'm trying to fight the homerishness that wants me to put the New York Football Giants in second place, because at the end of the day, the team just doesn't live up, and last year, this Washington team overachieved. With Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, the stable of running backs, and if Taylor Heinicke is half the guy that he was against Tampa Bay, when he gets out there, and he will get out there, this team could shock a few teams. They certainly could. That leaves me with, and look, I know it's a short run, but the NFC East is not very good. That leaves me with the Cowboys in first, and look, if they're healthy, they're going to win the division. That's just the way it is. Dak goes down last year, they lose the division. If Dak's okay and Zeke is okay, along with the talent we know they have at the skill positions, it's just the way it is. They're going to win this division, in my opinion. So now we get to the NFC West, and I left the best for last. 49ers in last place. We've been through it. We talked about it a little bit with Garoppolo versus Lance. That's it. 49ers in last place. In third place, I have the Seattle Seahawks. Now you might ask you, whoa, Nick, isn't that a little low? Perhaps. But the reason I have them a little low is because I do think this Cardinals team is going to improve, and I think the Rams, with the addition of Matthew Stafford, will open up another level of that offense. We'll get to that in a sec. I love Russell Wilson. And here's the thing. So I told you I have the Saints as one of my wildcard teams. I have all three of these teams from the West making the playoffs. I have Seattle getting in, the Rams getting in, and the Cardinals getting in. So I have Seattle in third place, but I have them being a good team. I do like the addition of Gerald Everett a lot. You're stealing from a division rival, and you're bringing in a guy who's a pretty good contributor. I like Tyler Lockett. He's got great chemistry with Russ. DK Metcalf, solid wide receiver. Chris Carson, you know, I haven't been necessarily sold. I think he's just another guy at a certain point. I think the secondary of this team is going to be interesting, minus Griffin. Big extension for Jamal Adams. Okay, whatever. Bobby Wagner's still anchoring this linebacking core. The front four, I think defensively they could be better. You know what I mean? And I don't mean better than last year. I mean they literally could be a better team than this. But that's just the way that it is right now. I think the offense will carry this team. As weird as that sounds for a Seattle squad, I think realistically with Russ, Metcalf, Lockett, and I think Gerald Everett's going to have the best year of his career. If I'm being completely honest, I don't know how the chemistry is going to go between him and Russ. Gerald Everett coming off of already the best year in his career with 41 snags, 400 yards. I think Gerald Everett might double those stats this year. Maybe not in terms of catches, but in terms of yardage, I can see him getting 600-700 yards as a receiver. I think with the improvisation that Russell brings, and I know he's getting a little older, I think that having a tight end that's athletic, like Gerald Everett, who's got fairly consistent hands, could be a really big acquisition for them. In second place, I have the aforementioned Rams. I do think that Jared Goff is a decent quarterback. I do. We did the QB tier list before. I have him as a decent QB. I think Matthew Stafford is one of those guys that if his team would ever win, and part of that has to do with him, they would put him in the elite conversation. And by elite, I'm not saying top five, I'm saying top 10. Call it the very good bracket then. Maybe elite's only top five. Maybe I overspoke. Oversold it, rather. Think it's big to add Sony Michel to this backfield, along with guys like Daryl Henderson. I like Robert Woods on the outside. Love Robert Woods, you know that. I love Cooper Kupp on the outside. I think Higbee's a pretty good tight end. I think letting Everett go was kind of big. I like Higbee and Everett, the way they played off of each other and the way they kind of filled out the offense. Maybe they'll get some production out of the other guys in that tight end room. They weren't big names before. Who knew Higbee? Who knew Everett? I have faith in Sean McVay, if I'm being honest. Along with the fact that this might be Matthew Stafford's best chance ever to make a playoff run, being out of Detroit. And look, he's in a rough division, but he's also got a rough rider kind of squad going around him. You know the big names on the defense. You know Leonard Floyd. You know Aaron Donald. You know Jalen Ramsey. But it's a pretty good offensive squad, and I think that they might be one of the bigger surprises in the NFC. I think some people will be surprised by the fact that the Saints are still a decent team. I think more than anything, the fact that the Rams take a step forward with an aging quarterback might be a little bit of a surprise. This might be, and this is an overreach, I know. I'm not saying they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but I'm saying this could be his sort of, you know, Kurt Warner in Arizona moment. Now, maybe it's more apropos to say Carson Palmer in Arizona, because he didn't win anything in Cincy, didn't win anything in Arizona. That's more likely. Strong arm QB, getting older. But, look, I don't know. I think it could be a big acquisition for them. Finally, we have the Arizona Cardinals, and I have them winning the division. Seattle in third, Rams in second, Arizona Cardinals in first. Without Larry Fitzgerald, which makes me sad. However, adding James Conner to that backfield with Chase Edmonds, they're kind of going to cobble it together. We'll see who the lead back will wind up being. DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. AJ Green, if he can stay healthy, and I'm crossing fingers for him and fantasy owners everywhere. Kyler Murray. I liked what I saw out of Kyler Murray in flashes. Like I said, the rookie year, I thought he was a little overrated. I thought he was a little overrated at the beginning of last year, if we're being honest, but they started piecing it together. Almost throws for 4,000, winds up injured towards the tail end. 26 touchdowns to 12 picks. Rushes for 800 yards and 11 touchdowns. The guy had a great year in his age 23 season. I think with the way this team is trending, they will win this division. I do. I think the addition of, if he can stay healthy, part two, J.J. Watt on the D-line to add some credibility, Malcolm Butler in the secondary adds even more. I think they've got young players like Buda Baker and Isaiah Simmons. It's very exciting. Chandler Jones might have a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a mid-career sort of renaissance, if you will. Is that a stretch? Which way am I stretching harder? Am I stretching harder saying mid-career at age 31, or am I stretching harder saying renaissance? He had one sack last year. Played five games. Year before, 19 sacks. This guy's a productive pass rusher. Maybe, you know what, it is a stretch to say a renaissance. Guy that had 19 sacks 2 years ago. Maybe J.J. Watt's the one that's going to have the renaissance. How's that for a take? J.J. Watt, the guy that's coming off of, a healthy season, where, by the way, he had five sacks. The year before, played eight games and had four. Maybe he can get back to 2018 J.J. Watt. Oh, by the way, 17 and 16, that guy wasn't around either. Maybe he can get back to 2015 J.J. Watt. Or maybe he'll get hurt in week six. This team's got a lot of hype around him, and it makes you uncomfortable when you're buying into a team that's hyped up, but I think at the end of the day that it's deserved, and I think this team will be pretty darn good. Vying for the top seed is maybe a little bit of a stretch. I've got the Buccaneers vying for that. I don't think the Cowboys will necessarily be good enough for that, though I think their division might be bad, so that might help them. And considering the fact that they're due to the way that the season ended last year, going to be playing a third-place schedule, fell behind the Giants and everything, you know, with the whole thing with them in Philly, which was weird. I do think it'll be Bucks vying for the top seed. I think I won't go so far as to confirm it, because then you got to tune in next week. I mean, come on, I can't give it all away. But I think the Packers and Cardinals will be chasing that as well in the 2 and 3 kind of jumble. Maybe I'll be high on the Cowboys next week. We'll see how that goes. But that brings us to the end of our NFC projections. A little bit of news and notes before we wrap up the episode. What else we have here? Travis Etienne going to miss the year with a foot injury. I believe it was a Lisfranc. Very sad to hear for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are already in a little bit for a rough road. It's going to be even worse. Vinnie Curry going to be out for the year as well. Second member of the Jets front seven to miss the year. Wishing him all the best. I believe he has a blood condition, which is a little spooky, if we're being honest. Congrats to Robbie Anderson. 2-year, $20 million extension. We knew he had the talent. By we, I mean me. Knew he had the talent when he was playing with the Jets. Really blossomed in moving down to Carolina. And I hope he continues to blossom, and that Sam Darnold being there, you know, doesn't really bring it back down to where he used to be. I believe that's just about it. Just one more that we had to touch on. I couldn't not do it. Phillip Rivers wins his high school coaching debut. Congratulations. And Jerry Jones says, former QB Tony Romo is a first ballot Hall of Famer, despite never winning a championship. I don't apologize for that. Well, you don't have to apologize for anything, Jerry. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, first of all. It's the beauty of the United States of America, the country I know and love. Second of all, I don't think you're right. I think you are very wrong. And I think you are being blinded by the fact that, you know, you have a good relationship with the man. The guy had a winning record. Well, in seasons where he started more than 13 games, and we have to lower the bar, he had a winning record four times. He went in back-to-back years, 8-8, 8-8, 8-7. Nothing really. You need some kind. Look, for me, I'm a New Yorker. That's the way we view things. Maybe in other states you guys view things differently. Maybe if you're a fan of a team that doesn't necessarily, you know, make the playoffs all the time, you're like, well, you know, he's great. Okay, so put him in the Hall of Honor, the Ring of Honor. Every team has it. Don't put him in the Hall of Fame. You want to talk about a guy that can make the Hall of Fame without having won? We're talking Larry Fitzgerald level, you know, prolific player. Larry Fitzgerald, 1,400 career receptions, 17,000-plus receiving yards, 120-plus touchdowns, a guy that if he wanted to at age 38 could still go out and catch 30-plus balls for this Cardinal team that might be going on a playoff run. I wonder if they couldn't talk him into it in mid-November. I kind of hope they do, because I think they have a pretty good shot at a run here. Goodness gracious. a guy that kind of grit it through for a team. And look, he's totally a Ring of Honor sort of player as well. He played for one team his whole career and all that. And if you want to put Tony in the Ring of Honor, four-time Pro Bowler, look, you know, 36 touchdowns in 07. Look, that's fantastic. Oh, 31 touchdowns, 34 touchdowns. Yeah, that's fantastic. Who cares? Honestly, as a guy looking, and I know the NFL lets in more of these guys maybe than some other sports. I mean, the NBA, I think, is a little bit even further with that, where it's like, oh, yeah, the guy was pretty good. Yeah, let's put him in the Hall of Fame. Okay. Maybe I take a little bit of a small hall approach, to use a Major League Baseball term. You're either a small hall or big hall. I get it. There's an inner circle level of talent, and you don't need to break into that inner circle to be a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying you need to be Joe Montana. I'm not saying you need to be John Elway. I would advocate for a guy like Eli Manning to be in the Hall of Fame. Call me a homer if you want. It's okay. I don't care. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. His accumulation of stats puts him above the top with a lot of QBs. He deserves to get in, and I think the fact that you would argue Tony Romo's a first-ballot Hall of Famer, I mean, you should give Eli Manning a gold jacket tomorrow if that's the case, because he accomplished so much more than Tony Romo did. It's not even close. That'll bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 109, presented by Last Word on Sports. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next Saturday afternoon for the following episode, episode number 110, where we're going to go into our Super Bowl prediction. We're going to play through the whole playoffs with our little bracket we have set up. We're going to pick the postseason awards. And oh, by the way, as the NFL season opener approaches, NFL season opener is going to be September the 9th. Our next episode is going to be the 4th. We're going to break it down. We're going to preview the Buccaneers opener, the defending champs taking the field to do their thing. Will they win? We'll find out. We'll break it down next week. That and more. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.